Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Irate Tireless Minority, where we talk about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And we do so with a decidedly Christian bias, and we're not going to apologize for it. Or at least I should say, I'm not going to apologize for it, since I'm the host. Anyway, getting started with politics. Can a court order you to commit perjury? First two stories here under politics are both coming to you from WorldNet Daily. And this one is I was all prepared and now I'm feeling discombobulated. But the title of this one is Rule of Law Takes Hit in Court's Order to Commit Perjury from May 7th. And this is about a case of a woman, Doreen Hendrickson, who was jailed last year on contempt of court charges for refusing a federal court order to perjure herself. Now, I have not read all of this case. I haven't gone back and read the rulings or the arguments or what have you. I'm just trusting the WorldNet Daily article here. But even if I, you know, to know the niceties, but that's kind of the trick of the law, isn't it? That there's always some little weaselly loophole here or there so that nobody is quite sure what the law is. And if you try to stand on the Constitution, well, there's some lawyer to assure you that there's this or that condition that applies that makes what you think are your rights plainly expressed in the Constitution null and void. Okay, that's my little rant for today. But this is a case about Mrs. Hendrickson's husband published a book about taxes and what taxes are and whether or not you have, you know, how you can pay less, I guess, or something. And it's a little bit complicated. Basically, she was asked to sign a tax return, which, as all of you who pay taxes know, as all of us who pay taxes know, means that you are certifying that that tax return is true and correct to the best of your ability to know it. And if you sign that while you're lying, that's a pretty big deal too. I mean, that's a crime too. And she refused to sign it because she doesn't believe that she doesn't believe what she would be signing. She doesn't believe that the tax return was true or that she had, the book by her husband argues that the government hopes to suppress arguments. Oh, they're arguing the government hopes to suppress arguments made by Mr. Hendrickson in his book, Cracking the Code, The Fascinating Truth About Taxation in America. And they're saying that the federal government sought to suppress the book in court unsuccessfully. And when that failed, the Hendrickson family and its supporters argue authorities decided to go after the family and attempt to force Mrs. Hendrickson to swear falsely under oath that she believes what the government says. Some observers have even called for criminal charges against those involved in this legal assault. Brian Wright, a longtime liberty activist who attended Hendrickson's original trial, was so moved by the travesty he observed in the trial that he decided to write a book titled The Motor City Witchcraft Trials, outlining alleged abuses behind the case. And the thing is, she's been in jail for a year over this. It's not on the merits of the case whether or not anything like that had to do with it. The court claimed it did not have to rule on the illegality or unconstitutionality of the court order to her because she had another court. And this court claimed that it didn't have to rule on the illegality or unconstitutionality of the court order that was supposedly violated, or on whether it was appropriate for the trial court to instruct the jury not to consider the legality of the demands. If the ruling is allowed to stand, observers and legal experts warned of potentially devastating consequences to the rule of law due to due process of law, judicial integrity, like there's any of that left, freedom of speech, and all Americans' constitutionally protected rights. Basically, if this is allowed to stand, the government could force anyone to say anything under oath. Got that? Because they are trying to force this woman, and she has been in jail for a year over it, to say to sign something she doesn't agree to. In fact, she even agreed to sign it, but required only that there be included a little section that says she is being forced to sign it, coerced against her will. And they wouldn't accept that. They said that isn't sufficient. The panel of Sixth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals in Cincinnati that upheld the lower court ruling relied on an obscure legal theory to justify its decision to avoid ruling on what experts say are the key issues. Developed by the courts themselves to justify judicial power, the rarely used doctrine is known as collateral bar. In essence, the doctrine purports to allow court orders to stand and is aimed at ensuring the court's effective authority is upheld. However, the Supreme Court has ruled that transparently invalid orders are not shielded from review by the collateral bar doctrine, something the family and its supporters say the appellate court refused to recognize. That's what they used to uphold her conviction for contempt of court. They were able to sidestep the real issue in the case, whether violating a court order to commit perjury or any other crime in defiance of the most well-established constitutional protections is a valid reason to jail somebody. The lower court claimed that it's not a defense to the crime of contempt that the court order that the defendant is accused of violating was unlawful or unconstitutional. Really? So the court can order me to sign a document? The court can order me to speak? May all Americans remain mute in the face of such orders. The Congress. And that is why the show is titled, But Judges Can Do Whatever They Want. Because the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. But judges can do whatever they want. According to the Federalist Papers, Federalist number 78, the judiciary was supposed to be the weakest branch of government. The weakest, because they can't make law and they don't have the power of the purse. Standard of good behavior for the continuance in office of judicial magistracy, leave that one alone, is certainly one of the most valuable of the modern improvements in the practice of government. In a monarchy, it's an excellent barrier to the despotism of the prince, and in a republic, it is no less excellent barrier to the encroachments and depressions of the representative body. Our judges are behaving badly, and yet none of them are being removed. A whole bunch of Supreme Court justices should have been removed over that decision to decide that the word state means something other than it meant by context and common usage, and by their appalling decision in the homosexual marriage, and I'm putting quotes around marriage thing, because marriage is a contract that homosexuals cannot keep and therefore do not need. To change the definition to provide a legislative shortcut is beyond the authority of the justices and undermines the rule of law, as I've said before on this show. And everything is looking like it's crashed here, so if there's anybody joining me in the chat, I have no idea. But I'm afraid to reload because I'll have a blank page and I won't know what I'm telling you. In addition, I will say that we have the right as a people, our final palliative before going to force, use of force, in my opinion, is jury nullification. Jury nullification occurs when a jury returns a verdict of not guilty despite its belief that the defendant is guilty of the violation charged. The jury, in effect, nullifies a law that it believes is either immoral or wrongly applied to the defendant whose fate they are charged with deciding. This is a big deal. In the early part of our country, judges would actually tell juries about jury nullification. The court said in the 1735 trial of John Peter Zenger, charged with printing seditious libels of the governor of the colony of New York, despite the fact that Zenger clearly printed the alleged libels, the only issue, the court said, of the jury was free to decide as the court deemed the truth of or falsity of the statements to be irrelevant. So they were only allowed to say if he's guilty or not guilty. They returned a not guilty verdict. It was also used when the government has tried to enforce morally repugnant or unpopular laws. In the early 1800s, it was practiced in cases brought under the Alien and Sedition Act. In the mid-1800s, northern juries practiced nullification in prosecutions brought against individuals accused of harboring slaves in violation of the fugitive slave laws. In the prohibitionary era of the 30s, many juries practiced nullification in prosecutions brought against individuals accused of violating alcohol control laws. Juries clearly have the power to nullify. Whether they also have the right to nullify is another question. Quite frankly, at this point, I think we have a duty to nullify. I can't wait for somebody to be charged with not obeying death care and to go to a jury trial so that a hopefully informed jury can nullify that whole law. Early in our history, judges often informed jurors of their nullification right. They were, John Jay told jurors, you have a right to take upon yourselves to judge both the facts and the law. But judicial acceptance began to wane in the late 1800s, and now judges worry that informing jurors of their power to nullify will lead to jury anarchy, with jurors following their own sympathies, which is a reasonable concern in this era where people don't bother to inform themselves of the difference between a democracy and a republic. But that doesn't mean the judges get to say no. They don't get to. But if they don't inform us and we don't inform ourselves, then we get the government we deserve. And the thing is that having a jury trial and having a jury nullification, if a jury nullifies one law, in our current structure, convoluted and involved as it is, that could bring down the entire house of cards. And maybe that would be a good thing. Because we are so bound by laws right now that, according to overcriminalized.com, people are committing 5 to 10 felonies a day without knowing it. We need to do something. And moving on, because this has taken up about half the show, can the government claim copyright? Guess what, folks? California wants to own the copyright on everything. Well, not everything. But they are proposing a bill that would let the state government and its branches copyright all government works, as in everything. Video images of public meetings. Notes of public meetings. Anything the government produces. Now, see, the reason that the government, the federal government in general, and most state governments, I hope, don't claim copyright is because the people are paying for those things to be published. Those things, in my opinion, then become a work for hire, which means the people own the copyright to those things and the people can use those things as they please. It's my money going to make that meeting, my money going to make that document, that map, that whatever it is that the government puts out, that flyer, that public information flyer, that's my money going to that. That's a work for hire, my copyright, I can use it, it's public record, I can use it. Otherwise, my reporting, if I lived in California, if this law passed, and my reporting what somebody said at a town hall meeting, I could be socked with a copyright violation suit. And those are hefty fines, folks. And I know about work for hire because my avatar, the sketch I use of my younger self as an image for the show, as a sort of a brand for the show, is a work for hire. And I had to go through a lot of trouble to get the copyright officially for that because the person who drew it had died between when I was in high school and now. So I had to get his order to approve and send me notice in writing that it was a work for hire before the copyright office would assign me the copyright. The government, what the government produces, what the government does, belongs to the people because the people are paying for it. This is an important thing because if California does this, can the rest of the country be far behind? And how easy will it be to shut people up who are saying things you don't want? Oh, somebody at a local town hall meeting or the mayor of a large city said something in a public meeting that made him look bad, and then somebody posted it on YouTube, and it went viral. That person who posted it, and probably everybody who shares it, say me on my Blog Talk Radio program, could be sued for copyright. It's madness, absolute madness. We need people in California, get off your butts. I know they're making laws faster than you can sit on them, but for goodness sakes, we need to do something, and we need to do it relatively fast, I should think. Now, let's see here. Going to move on to religion. There is a video linked in the show description to a Vlad Tepes blog video about one of the problems they're having in Germany because the religion of peace ain't they swell. Guess what? The people from the religion of peace who are being hired as translators, which is an urgent need in Germany, excuse me, because they've allowed themselves, they welcomed invasion, all these refugees. So they have a desperate need for translators. But the thing is that when it comes to Yazidi refugees or Christian refugees or non-Sunni, apparently, refugees, those translators who happen to be Sunni are lying. If a Yazidi is attacked and they try to report it, the translator lies about what they say so that there are no consequences for the attackers if the attackers are also Sunni Muslims. Lying. And why are they lying? Because that's what's done in those countries. That's how they treat Christians and non-Muslims in those countries. And you expect them to come and invade this new country and to behave differently? This is the matter of course. This is the way things are to be done in Muslim countries. They are just doing what they have always done. You cannot replace your population with people who are this far from your understanding of normal and expect that to go well. You can't do it. Oh, yes, the religion of peace, and they value truthfulness, but of course only for people. And the only people who are considered people are Muslims, the followers of Islam. And apparently only the followers of the sect of Islam that share your sect. Because that's what Islam is. That's what Islam preaches. That's what Islam does. And if you're not, if you can't recognize that by now, wake up. It's bad for people. You should oppose Islam simply because it's bad for people, if for no other reason. And speaking of bad for people, I'm going to digress a little bit before we get to doing what's right. When you grow up in the country, you realize that there are boundaries. There are fences and gates. And if you're, you know, if you have permission to go through somebody, to traipse through somebody's land or go hiking on somebody's land or whatever, you're supposed to understand and know the rules about fences and gates. If you come to a gate that's open and you go through it, you leave it open. You don't close it. You don't assume the farmer wants that closed. If you come to a gate that's closed and you open it to go through, you close it behind you. And with that, it's because you don't know what's being fenced in or out. The farmer's got a bull in that field. He wants that gate closed because that's a liability to him if that bull gets out and starts hurting people or any other animal for that matter. And the fence is there in order so that if the bull hurts you while you're crossing that land, the farmer can say, I did give him permission to cross the land, but there's a fence around it with a gate that's closed, so they should know that in there. They should have some inkling that there might be an animal or two or three in there that could be dangerous to them. I gave them permission with the understanding that they weren't so stupid as to do stupid things. God does not say you should not stick your head into a vat of acid, but we can all agree that doing so would be harmful. Hey, there's a vat of hydrochloric acid. The Bible doesn't say anything against it. Let's go stick our heads in. The same goes for the Constitution. Part of being a self-reliant and personally responsible people is knowing what things are blatantly stupid and refraining from doing them as individuals as well as a people, as a people. And the article, the first article I have tagged under Doing What's Right is Transgender Affirmation, Bad for Children, but Planned Infanticide Doesn't Care. This is an article from April 3rd on Breitbart. 10 days after the American College of Pediatricians issued a stern statement warning of the dangers that gender ideology poses to children and adolescents, Planned Parenthood began a campaign on social media to train the next generation of trans allies. Train the next generation. In other words, make all our kids mentally ill. The recent ACP, that's American College of Pediatricians, statement denied much of the politically correct rhetoric used by transgender activists, with doctors calling for a more sober and realistic look at what the idea of gender fluidity actually does to children. Like a splash of ice water, the pediatricians declared that human sexuality is an objective biological binary trait rather than an infinite series of self-determined genders. The norm for human design, the doctor said, is to be conceived either male or female. Human sexuality is binary by design, with the obvious purpose being the reproduction and flourishing of our species. And therefore, XY and XX are genetic markers of health, not genetic markers of a disorder. While everyone is born with a biological sex, their awareness of their sexuality develops over time and may be derailed by a child's subjective perceptions, relationships, and adverse experiences from infancy forward. We all know this. Helping them accept their objective sexual identity is one of the objectives of good parenting and intelligent education. A person's belief that he or she is something they are not is at best a sign of confused thinking, the physician said. When an otherwise healthy biological boy believes he is a girl, or an otherwise healthy biological girl believes she is a boy, an objective psychological problem exists that lies in the mind, not the body, and it should be treated as such. This is damaging to children. Damaging. There has also been a study done that's widely boo-hooed or hidden, where it's shown that children who express homosexual tendencies, if they are not encouraged in those tendencies, will settle into normality, heterosexuality. Yes, I called it normality because that's what it is by dictionary definition. You can't take 3% of the population and say, oh, they're normal and the rest of us are not. I'm sorry, the definition doesn't work that way. They will settle into normality by the age of 21, and that's healthy for them. So you don't encourage the crazy. You don't enable the crazy. When children are young, sometimes they think they're birds. You don't strap on a pair of wings and send them to a cliff and tell them to fly off, do you? You may humor it a little bit, but you watch them close so that they're not climbing on top of the house to try and jump out the window and fly. Because that's not healthy. Folks, we've got to stop being stupid. The reason we have a societal bias, it's just a common sense bias against these behaviors is because they are unhealthy. And it is stupid to say it's not. It's unhealthy in every way it can be. Reminds me of a documentary I saw of a cult called the Flirty Fishers who believed that, you know, sex was something great from God, which it is in the right context, but they thought it should be everywhere. They sent their women out to lure men into the cult by sleeping with them. Pedophilia, no problem. Incest, no problem. And they put out a documentary earlier in the 70s, I think this was, when this cult was going, to show that see how our son is not affected by all this lewd and lascivious behavior with his mother. Documentary I saw was later. And that little boy grew up and murdered his mother. It's not healthy. Don't enable the crazy. It's not healthy for them. It's not healthy for the nation. It's not healthy for society. And you don't really need a whole lot of brains to figure that out. If people aren't reproducing, then you don't. And I know transgender is not the same as homosexual, but the point is the same. You need to not enable the crazy, and you need to ask, why is that fence there? Moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about socialism. All you people feeling the burn out there. Oh, socialism will work if the government pays for everything. Everything will be good, and we don't care about taxes as long as the government will give us whatever we want. Okay, they're trying that in Venezuela right now. And here is an article from May 4th from Pan Am Post, News and Analysis in the Americas. Here's the title: Hungry Venezuelans Hunt Dogs, Cats, Pigeons as Food Runs Out. Economic crisis and food shortages leading to looting and hunting stray animals. There's a fella on Ramon Muchacho on Twitter who posted a thing which I translated, and it says, just as a notice to those guys in the military who stole those goats, there are people in the plazas hunting dogs, cats, and pigeons to eat. Because the military stole somebody's goats because they didn't have any food for the military. That's how socialism's working out in Venezuela. They turned off electricity to save energy. They can't print more money because the paper's too expensive. It's crazy. Socialism doesn't work. It's never worked. All it works for is to create a situation whereby the socialists decide they need to get rid of any dissidents, and they do that by killing them. That's how socialism and communism works, because they can't stand dissent. But they don't make life better for the people over which it's enacted. Except for supporters. Got my 10-second warning. We are all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference, and we're all supposed to get out there, make a difference, and look up jury nullification. So if you're the one on that death care case jury, you can nullify that law for the rest of us. Have a great week.